showing one very very dramatic one showing Trump and back-to-back with Mussolini, and really similar facial expressions, body posture. So he does certainly invite these comparisons, the demagoguery, the dramatic oversimplification, the demonizing of social groups, the playing on people's fear. And Amy Goodman also yesterday morning had someone on talking about the, you know, an expert on fascism talking about it. These are scary times, and it, you know, it's like whether or not the you know, he meets the classic definition, there's definitely things to be concerned about. So we have one caller already on the line. Don, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I think you're right about fascism, you know, and it's definitely mostly coming from the right, but it's also coming from the left a little. And I'll give you an example. You were mentioning the MDAA that that Obama signed. What was, I think it was New Year's Eve, and nobody's paying attention. And that bill took away all of our rights to have a lawyer. They can call you a terrorist, even if you call up and support Lavoie Finucane, you know, they can say you're a terrorist just for saying stuff like that. And so he did that.
Wait, what's the exact language?
In the bill?
Yeah.
Well, basically, it just says that if they claim you're a terrorist, and it's real vague as far as what is a terrorist now, they can take you and lock you up, take you to an overseas.
Wait, you're not, those aren't the exact words. I want the exact language.
Well, I don't have it in front of me, but,
well, that's important. It makes it, well, it does.
Yeah,
it makes
right,
a difference.
Okay, Teresa Mitchell. Hey, listen, also, you're right about that, in that bill about taking away the copyrights for the Apache tribes. That's part of the same thing. This is a liberal president who sign this, you know.
Well, I don't know if he's liberal.
Well, yeah, I know, but he pretended to be, didn't he?
Yeah, well,
yeah,
that's
he did
true.
During the primary, because that's why I supported him. When I realized he wanted to expand the death penalty, he's going to give immunity to the telecoms for spying on this, I voted for Cynthia McKinney. So in the beginning, he did pretend to be a liberal. But I think he's just another Hillary. I'll vote for Trump if it comes down to just her. But here's the thing I wanted to tell you. I think Paul Ryan's going to be the next president, and I'll tell you why. Trump is going to, at the convention, they're going to make sure Trump doesn't get the nominee. He's going to run independently. Hopefully Bernie will run independently. There's a couple of good Libertarian and a Greens Party candidate who are going to get a lot of votes. Howard Stern and Jesse Ventura are talking about forming a team and running. So, in other words, nobody will get a majority. It goes to the House of Representatives. And who are they going to pick? The Speaker of the House.
Uh-huh. Well, we heard it here first. That could be. I mean, definitely there does seem to be.
I'll mail you a copy of the MDA with that section for you.
What's that?
I'll email you a copy.
Okay, I'd appreciate that. No, because I do, you know, I don't mean to be a, you know, a stickler for details, but
well,
you know, I think it's important to get the exact language, yeah, because it's, the, you know, these things are interpretable in various ways.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you have any law memorized?
Oh, I'm not. I'm no. I'm
neither. Nobody does. There's billions of laws. We're supposed to know everyone. If you're
right, but you're the one
law,
you're the one who's bringing it up. But anyway, right. That, well, you know, we don't need to get into a little snit about this.
No,
but
that's primarily what it says. What I said.
Okay.
What I told you.
All right.
Great.
Well, thank
good
you for calling.
Yeah, right.
And you know, there's an article. I would like to recommend some things for people to check out. One thing that I found extremely distressing. This article headlined, Florida man goes undercover at a Trump rally. Pretending to be a Trump supporter almost broke my brain. And it's this really detailed account of this guy who actually helped organize an anti-Trump rally. Oh, gosh, where was this? Oh, no. Maybe somebody read this also. In Florida, possibly Orlando. Anyway, organized this rally and then, you know, wanted to go inside and find out what it was all about, and found it extremely revealing and very difficult. Oh, I got a note saying Robert Paxton was the expert on fascism, so you can check him out. So anyway, Florida man goes undercover at a Trump rally. Basically, he you know, attempts to engage in people in conversation, and just finds the atmosphere really rather terrifying. How people are, you know, it's basically, we're talking about mass psychology, and of course Wilhelm Reich wrote the book, The Mass Psychology of Fascism, there's something that takes hold. Anybody who's been to, you know, a big sporting event with a full crowd, you know, there's that atmosphere of, you know, excitement, enthusiasm, sort of something bigger than yourself, loud. It's like, you know, or like a big stadium rock concert. You know, there's these, you know, it's, or, you know, if anybody was at the Nuremberg rallies. Yeah, I mean, these are comparisons that must be made, because there's something that happens in a big crowd that basically carries people to places they may not have intended to go by themselves. And it can be very dangerous. There's plenty of sociological evidence of, you know, whether it's a Ku Klux Klan rally where people commit unspeakable violence when on an individual basis they wouldn't have, whatever it is. These are, you know, as I say, these are, you know, important things to look at, because, you know, we don't know exactly where things are headed. You know, people in Germany in 1920 had no idea, you know, that Hitler would take power. People in Italy in 19—Hitler came later. It was Mussolini came first. I believe he came to power in 23, and I believe Hitler came to power in 33. In any case, the point I'm making is that these things to take on a life of their own. There's kind of a tipping point, and that's kind of the comparison I want to make between what's going on with the climate and, you know, potentially what's going on in society. Is there's these social and ecological tipping points that take on a life of their own, what they call positive feedback loops. And what's happening in the Arctic right now with the methane releases is a truly dramatic something that is goes beyond what we had any way to like imagine just a matter of decades ago, that we had no idea things were going to go this far, this fast. And Robert Hunziker has an article came out just a couple days ago called "Does Methane Threaten Life?" The question of whether methane in the atmosphere is a threat to life is extraordinarily complex and generally not well understood. But yes, it is a serious threat, very serious and horribly real. So a few things I want to throw out there. I'll continue to talk about these. It's coming up on 8:30, and we've got another caller. Wait for my engineer to get off the phone with the next person waiting on the line. I beg you to have patience here. Go ahead. You're on the air. Don. Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Usually there's a click. Okay, well, since Donald Trump wants to make everything simplistic, I'm going to make it simplistic. It all began with Ronald Reagan. If you want to look at the environmental thing, when he took the solar panels off the White House, to militarizing the United States even more and going into perpetual war to make money for his buddies and all that, and also doing all kinds of social conservative things. Branding people who don't love America as, you know, totally before there was terrorism, you were un-American. I was listening to people when he was elected that say, "Oh yeah, he's going to fix things. He's going to fix things." You know, Ron Reagan. You know, he wears a gun on his shoulder and all this kind of stuff. And there was a shining light on the hill. It's morning in America. So I just kind of find it fitting that you have Scalia and Nancy back to back getting buried, and then you have Donald Trump rising from the grave, and using all these simplistic things that old Ronnie did way back 35 years ago. So you reap what you sow. Now all the established Republicans are all getting really sweaty because, you know, they've created this Frankenstein that's come out and make it really simplistic again, and this time it's with people who've been burned by Reaganomics and believing in this that person, you know, that co-started with a chimpanzee. So I kind of agree with Teresa Mitchell. You know, they're Trump chimps. And it's just, so this is what you get when you simplistic things, and, you know, and just you have, now you're attracting, you know, making everybody so stupid and getting all doed up. So you have somebody coming around and saying the same things but in a different way. And so now you're seeing the establishment say, hey, wait, this is not how it's supposed to turn out.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, some of this is my opinion. Some of it is, just listening a little bit more intensely on discussions. It's just really amazing, especially when I was hearing something like 100 industrialists in Georgia were meeting, and their whole thing is how to get rid of Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so the first time in my adult life, I'm going to watch the Republican convention. This is going to be better than world wrestling. So anyway, that's okay. All I have to say. Bye.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
I'm actually tendentially going to want to go back to the first caller, it's all too easy, though, to pick on figures like Reagan and to say it started with Reagan, to point to Trump. I mean, I think it is important to point to particular figures that we might think are particularly dangerous and could take things to a different level. But the stage was set, you know, long ago. There's something within the, you know, the American culture itself that breeds these sorts of figures. And whether or not they breed the antidote to those figures sufficiently remains to be seen. But let's go to our next caller. Hello. Johnny, you're on the air.
All right, cool. Thank you. Good morning, and big gratitude to the KBOO clan. So the first thing, I have a couple things here that I want to touch base on, and the first one being something that was just mentioned. You were talking about the stage is set, and I want to just kind of throw in the term propaganda and how that's brought to the living rooms of all Americans via the big boob tube and how folks kind of, I've seen in the past and in the present that there are a lot of programs out there where these like obscene things happen on TV, and the people, the actors they just kind of blow it over, and they just let in. I can't specify exactly what it is, but things that would normally happen in everyday life that you would like take control over and deal with, folks just kind of like ignore it. And it's like a propaganda set. And that brings me into the second topic that I want to discuss, and which is the hysteria quotient. You were talking about, you know, there's something that happens to people when they get together. And it's like a turning of consciousness when over 50% of the crowd kind of get hyper or hysterical. It turns the rest of the crowd into a hysterical place, even though that's not a place where they originally wanted to go. And it's kind of just, it's a psychological fact that happens to humans. They folks can become hysterical if mixed in a crowd where the crowd, over 50% of the crowd, becomes hysterical. And that ties in.
What do you mean by hysterical?
So how Donald Trump seems to be inciting hatred in his crowd, and his crowd, like, you see these protesters, and like a normal, seems like a normal level-headed person would, instead of bashing the protesters that have been assaulted in his rallies, nobody stands up for them. They all like project this method of hate at the protesters, and the whole crowd is just like, you know, they just kind of gang up on people, and people that would normally not be hateful towards other people kind of join in. And it's like, it's a psychological link between humans that it just naturally happens. And
I'd be careful about that word naturally. I think we need to examine perhaps a little more closely what these phenomena actually are, but go ahead. Keep making your point.
Thank you for that. So a couple of years ago, I took an environmental politics class at a community college, and one of the subjects that came up was called implemented control. And implemented control looks like a device that is implemented into society that controls you for somebody. So in other words, like before cell phones, you didn't see people walking around with their head down looking at this screen. They had other things on their mind. And now that there's this implement of control, their folks seem to be controlled by this implement, the cell phone. And along with the technology that is being, so said, quote unquote, discovered and realized, there is a plan where certain entities of the creators of these implements have decided that they want to engineer these things so that folks can respond to news events on a moment's notice without time to think about it. And so what that looks like is if something major event is going on and you can find it, you can see it on your cell phone and you can respond to it and vote on it within seconds without any time to think about it. And this is something that the creator of the guy that is it Apple, the guy that created the or I can't remember,
anyway,
the rich guy that died, uh-huh, that created the cell phone, the iPhone, he wanted to produce an aspect of our technology that gives people the ability to respond on world news within a moment's notice, without thinking about it. And that's not where humans are. You know, like we evolved by giving ourselves time to contemplate things before we act on them.
Uh-huh. No, I see your point. I think that's a very acute point, that this nexus of, technology and frustrated expectations and economic downturn and this these master manipulators of the media, like obviously Donald Trump, with people comparing his rallies to actually a real live reality TV. It seems to be a really insidious brew that's developing. But we got a couple other callers.
Okay,
so
can I leave with a recommendation? Uh-huh. There's a movie out there called America, Freedom for Fascism. And it's tax officers that have quit the IRS because they have come across an impossible question. And that question is there a law devised to punish people for not paying their taxes? Tax fraudulation and tax evasion are two different things.
Okay.
And so... yeah, thank you for the show, and this is exciting. My heart is pumping.
All right. Well, thank you for calling. Appreciate your taking the time and your willingness to call in. So I do want to, what you just brought up is one thing I really want to talk about. I think that we really need to pay attention to this, the mass psychology of fascism. I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs from the Wikipedia entry. The question at the heart of Reich's book was this: why did the masses turn to authoritarianism, even though it is clearly against their interests? Reich set out to analyze, quote, the economic and ideological structure of German society between 1928 and 1933 in this book. In it, he calls Bolshevism red fascism and groups in the same category as Nazism. Reich argued that the reason Nazism was chosen over communism was sexual repression. As children, members of the proletariat had learned from their parents to suppress sexual desire. Hence, in adults, rebellious and sexual impulses caused anxiety. Fear of revolt, as well as fear of sexuality, were thus anchored in the character of the masses. This influenced the irrationality of the people, Reich would argue. Now, I think, you know, he himself did oversimplify things a bit, that I think people are somewhat more complex than, I think he was overly phallocentric. But this idea of repression of, you know, our instinctual life energy and, you know, going back to what our previous caller said regarding hysteria and the, sort of this release of emotion in these mass rallies, a frustrated emotion, you know, whether it's sexuality, whether whatever it is, I think that's something we really need to pay attention to. So with that, let's go to, we got more callers. Lance, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, you just said it. Frustration of emotions. Steve Jobs creating this nexus of technology to where we should be able to have the regular person should be able to have some say-so into what's going on in our society at large. I will quote a Nassim Taleb, March 7. He said that people are finally voting to destroy the establishment. The establishment is composed of journalists, BS vending talking heads with well-formulated verbs, bureaucratic cronies, lobbyists in training, New Yorker writing semi-intellectuals, image-conscious empty suits, Washington rent seekers, and other well-meaning vocal elites are not getting the point about what is really happening in the sterility of their arguments. People are not voting for Trump or Sanders. People are just voting to finally destroy the establishment. And like you said before, people are getting frustrated because of this amazing technology of cyberspace. People, whether they like it or not, are being exposed to a deeper truth that we weren't exposed to 15 or 20 years ago. So people had the beauty of ignorance 15 or 20 years ago. Now it's in their faces, whether they are conservatives or liberals. They're realizing they're having to deal with a real human issue here. And it's kind of like watching a left brain and a right brain find its own way of fixing the same problem. One's going to try to talk its way through, and the other one's just going to knock it down. But in the end, it's gone. And I'll let you take over from there. I don't want to take up too much of your airtime.
No. If you want to continue to engage, I'm just I'm not sure it's only the desire to destroy the establishment. You know, the playing on these fears of immigrants, these fears of, you know, there's a racialization also of what's going on. There's I think a genderization. You know, he's, you know, definitely playing into the whole patriarchal power control thing. There's this sort of, you know, he's the rich man, you know, the sort of almost the extreme fetishization and kind of it's almost a caricature of the so-called American dream. You know, this, it's almost like people kind of realize it's gone, but they desperately are clinging on to this idea that anybody can get rich, you know, the self-made man idea, which of course Trump wasn't. But, you know, I think there is an element, this sort of like, you know, let's just, you know, get it all over with somehow. Or yeah, there's, which is dangerous.
Well, it's the paradox and the irony of our American system. Okay, one minute everyone's talking about freedom and having constitutional rights, but then at the same time, there are those who aren't as free and who are being denied their constitutional rights. That's the irony and a paradox, mm-hmm. that's going to come home to roost in this country. They're all the rich and the poor are like what you said. Everyone's trying to live a 1950s lifestyle. The rest of the planet wanting to live like the United States. and everyone's doing the numbers, and they're realizing that the planet can't sustain a 1950s lifestyle. So now we're all having to go through this change, and a lot of people aren't really happy with going any deeper than they want to. Like, the depth of our conversation is nothing compared to what a lot of people are really. They just want their jobs. They don't care if they're cheap, if they're tree cutters, and they don't care that the entire forest is about to get chopped down because they want the security of their jobs. They don't care. They just want their jobs at the expense of who? Their grandchildren, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
This is the termite culture that we're creating, and Wilhelm Reich, in my opinion, was way ahead of his time, and he discovered many things when he came to America. They put him in jail and they destroyed all of his work. He as far as I'm concerned, he discovered something, and he was really onto something. And most of all, he was right in the middle of World War II. He saw how everyone was changing. He saw how everyone was upset with the Weimarian runaway inflation. I mean, we're right in the same exact situation that we were in 70 years ago, but instead of in Weimar Germany, it's here in the United States. And everyone's in the back of their mind, consciously or unconsciously. Some people are aware of this. Some people aren't.
Well, except you know, in Germany, and also I believe in Italy, people were like carrying, you know, wheelbarrows full of paper money.
Exactly.
You know, that was, you know, I think the ability of the system to control such things and to not let it get to the point, but I don't know, it has to exert so much massive control just to keep things in a semblance of normality. I'm just not, it seems like it's going to come apart at the seams in a, anyway.
It's like that mass psychology is at least the mass control is starting to lose its grip on the millions of people. And I really don't think the exposure to truth is helping anything.
I suspect you might be right about that.
Well, it's creating a type of schizophrenia in society. I mean, and this is the type of schizophrenia we're seeing in the racisms and the sexisms, you know, and all these isms.
People. Yeah, when Black Lives Matter, I mean, that just freaks people out even more. Yeah, it's a terrible situation. I don't know. You know, maybe we just got to resign ourselves to
And all Black Lives Matter had to do was put T-O-O at the end of their slogan, and people would have got a deeper understanding of what these guys are trying to say. But they were giving the public way too much credit. So I don't want to, you know, use up too much of your time. But yes, things are going down. And I personally believe people at an unconscious level are just fed up with the system. And they're going to say, let's just wipe this thing clean and go through what Germany went through, even if it was painful. Look at Germany now. It's a nice place. Jews get zero headache, and they get less. Jews get less of discrimination in Germany than they probably do in any other European nation. You know what I mean?
I don't know about that, but you brought up a whole lot of things, man, and I appreciate your calling. And we do have a couple other callers. So,
okay, bye bye.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Where to go from there? Let's just go to our next caller, George. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Paul. I just want to mention a book I heard about, and I think it was on KBOOB, or maybe it was in one of the bibliographies or some remark in an article. And I checked with Powell's. No, they don't have it. I checked with it.
What's the book?
The book is called On Western Terrorism.
Okay.
From Hiroshima to Drone Warfare.
All right.
And it introduces a new person who's been around a while, whose, I think, mother is Chinese, and whose father was, I think, a Czechoslovakian scientist. And this guy is a good friend of someone most of us have heard of a bit, a guy named Noam Chomsky.
Uh-huh. Well,
and this guy's name is Andre, and I'll try to pronounce his last name.
That's okay. I think the name of the book is...
Let me just say his name. Voltchek, spelled V like victory, L like Leo, T like Tom, C like cat, H like Harry, E like Edgar, K like whatever, Kool-Aid or something. Andrei Volchek in conversation with Noam Chomsky, and the book covers a wide range of issues, including a lot of the stuff that comes on KABU every day, everything from racism, sexism, to the economics of disaster and history. These two guys are really get into it, and they're apparently friends now for over 20 years, and this is published by Pluto Press.
Okay, George, that's, I think you're getting into more detail than we actually need.
Well,
we only have 10 minutes
left
here.
It costs $20, and you can get it if you have to order it specially. You can order it from a lot of different bookstores.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, George. Appreciate it.
You bet.
And we got another caller. Sean, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the key word is tribalism.
How so?
Well, because what we're talking about, and specifically it was your comment to the caller a couple of calls ago who was talking about propaganda and people being hysterical, is, and even earlier were examples given of what were really more, let's say, conservative meetings of people getting hysterical and so forth, how people react in crowds. But, you know, it is natural. You said, you know, we have to be careful of the word natural. But the fact is that, you know, whether you're talking propaganda and so forth, you know, how many cultures have gotten worked up in a tribalism type of manner, worked up over war?
Well, I got to stop you right there, though, because truly disagree with the use of the word tribalism.
Okay, well, that's fine. That's fine. I'm just throwing it out there. But
right,
tribalism
is
a key factor in...
No, but you have to describe, what do you mean by tribalism?
It's because of how when people... Okay, just let me make my point. You can disagree or not.
I don't understand your point, because I don't know what tribalism means.
Tribalism is when people get together, it doesn't matter what group, and believe heavily through an act of, let's say, faith in what they believe in. And the fact is that the people in propaganda have specifically studied these things, and when I say it, that I believe that it is natural, is they are appealing to an aspect of the human being, a natural process of who a human being is. And the fact is that you can't, for the most part, appeal to people's rational behavior. They appeal to an irrational, emotional level in human beings.
I guess
that's what people more react off of. That's why they get worked up.
Right. Well, I guess the way I personally react to the term tribalism, because I actually see it as a function of mass society, not of what I would call, quote, tribal society.
Well, but okay, fine. So it can be mass society. You can say it's all of the population or a smaller piece of the population that believes or is led to believe heavily in a certain ideology.
Right. But I guess so. I just think that the term tribalism is used as sort of discredit. It's sort of a thing that so-called advanced mass civilized societies use to discredit what they destroyed, basically, which is actually kinship-based, clan-based, or tribal society. So I just think that I think there's a lot of confusion around the term tribalism. I think we have to be very careful about
well,
using
there's
that.
A lot of confusion around a lot of terminology. I mean, terminology is brought up by man, right? We're the ones who create it.
Right.
So you can call it whatever you want.
Well, no, it's not. It's not a question of whatever you want. I think we should not use that. I think we should not use that term tribalism.
Why?
In that sense. Because it's...
What,
it's
is there something in the term tribe that bothers you?
No, because it's a negative connotation.
How is it a negative connotation?
Tribalism?
Yeah.
Well, aren't you using it as a negative...
You could almost say that about classism. You're pointing out, you're almost saying... That's specifying a certain person. It's almost like being prejudiced.
Well, okay. Well, I mean, to really suss this stuff out would take probably longer than we have
well,
here.
I think you're making a bigger point out of it than it has to be. It is tribalism. It's a certain tribe of people who get worked up or believe heavily in an ideology. It doesn't matter whether it's the John Birch Society or Greenpeace.
No, I guess, saying ideology is okay. All. So, because what I think of as kinship-based society is not ideological based. So I think we're mixing apples and oranges here. That what I think mass society was created as a historical process through the destruction of kinship society, or some people call it tribal society.
So mass society was created through a natural process.
What was?
mass society, you're saying mass society was created through what can be considered a
well,
natural
you know,
process.
I would say that's a problematic use of the term
well,
natural.
Well, why be so concerned about whether it's natural or not when the fact is if man is reacting this way, whether it's manipulated or not, it's based upon man's natural emotional reaction to things, especially when they get worked up in a mass hysteria.
Well,
I mean, isn't that natural?
Well, it is and it isn't. That's the thing. It
so
is
saying,
and it
even
isn't.
Even though it's manipulated by humans who understand a natural instinct of how humans should be, that's not natural.
Well, of course it's natural, but it's also unnatural in the sense that it's an artificial manipulation of a natural state.
Of
so yeah, it gets into really
like
complicated.
Noam Chomsky's book, you know, Manufactured Dissent. I mean, they understand what they're doing, and they understand what they're doing. It's like psychops.
Right. No, I agree
all
with that
about
point.
Understanding the natural processes of how humans react to a certain situation.
No, I totally agree with that whole point, and I think that's a really important one. But we have one more caller, and I have
Good.
To
that's
I want to respect
point.
Them. Okay, thank you so much for calling. Let's get to our last caller. Mark, you're on the air.
Good morning, Paul. I want to strongly recommend two great writers, Dostoevsky and Eric Fromm. Dostoevsky said that, and he was a great critic of the West, he said that people would sacrifice their freedom to the Grand Inquisitor for his promise of happiness. Eric Fromm's book, Escape from Freedom, explains how the fear of the new and fear of the future lead people to authoritarianism. And I think that's a very very convincing explanation. The difference between American militarism and German militarism is really minuscule.
But I'm afraid of the new, in a sense, and I'm afraid of the future, too. But I don't feel like I'm tending towards authoritarianism.
I also want to recommend Nathan Robinson's article in currentaffairs.org. He says, unless Sanders is nominated, that a Trump nomination means a Trump presidency, because Trump has these risque jokes that are able to divert constantly from issues, and Hillary is not capable of countering that. So I recommend that to you.
Okay.
And the Republicans give us a Bernie Sanders victory, which is super, you know.
Well, we'll see if that's going to be the case. But thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
And we are just about out of time here. We got 2 minutes till the end of the hour. And I'm going to stay on for the next hour with Political Perspectives. As I said, we've got a really important program here talking about the Apache tribal attempt to protect their sacred sites. In Arizona, under the threat from a land privatization land exchange. So that's coming up in a second. I'll be right back. Thank you all so much for calling. Thank you for everyone who called. This is an important discussion, and I hope we continue it. The mass psychology of fascism. Are we heading in that direction? What to do about it? It's okay.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Extreme Amateur Games Scooter Competition Qualifier, Sunday, March 27th at D Block Indoor Skate Park in Clackamas. There are three levels: beginner, intermediate, and advanced. Competition signups are available online at extremeamateurgames.com or on the day of the event at the park.